Kamenetsky Brothers, Land of Lakers podcast. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky, coming to you Monday afternoon. The Monday that Meta World Peace became a New York Knicks.
Otherwise known as July 15th.
Right. The day that will forever be known as the day Meta World Peace became a New York Knicks. It'll actually say that on the calendar. Everybody's going to have to reprint it.
I don't know how they're going to do the numerical abbreviation for that, because normally it's 7-15.
Right.
This is going to be tougher.
We're all going to have to get together and put our thinking caps on. No surprise that he ends up in New York. I think it was his stated preference to either there or possibly the Clippers or, I guess, Shanghai. But really no surprise in the end that he ends up with the Knicks. But it was
even less surprise that he went through waivers.
Yeah. I don't think people wanted to toy with that contract.
Meta doesn't seem to be on board with coming here, but let's take a chance.
He's fun. So Meta is a Knick, and best of luck to him. It's a great spot for him to land. Hopefully he can finish out his career somewhere that in a place like that that's meaningful to him. Were you surprised at all in the end at the Lakers? Because the savings, there were numbers like $30 million thrown around and all these other things.
$30 million would have been had Dwight stuck around.
But then, then it was like $25 million. And the numbers were kind of bandied about. The ending number for how much the Lakers save is about $14 million, I think, once you take away the money that's going to be paid Meta by the Knicks, give or take. Which, is $14 million or whatever it is. But by Lakers standards, we don't think of that as a lot of money. By this team's standards, were you surprised, Andy, that they ended up pulling the trigger on the amnesty?
No, not in the slightest. Because in reality, Meta is not worth $14 million in terms of a luxury tax hit, and the type of hit that they're going to be taking, particularly when you take into account the luxury tax bill that they just paid for 2013. It led the league. About the only thing they led the league in this year. You could argue they didn't get their money's worth.
No, they led the league in disappointment, Andy.
Yeah. And
that was not money well spent.
And it also doesn't surprise me because, truth be told, whatever they're going to miss in Meta in terms of as a player, defensively, for example.
Right, we'll get to that in a second.
That's where I'd say his value is still the highest.
It's not in the open floor. It's not finishing on the break.
No.
It's not things like that.
It's not in shot selection.
No.
It's not.
We are going to miss Meta's shot selection. They may not.
I'll tell you, some of the people in the stands who used to always go, no, as he was starting to hoist up a shot, you don't know what you got till it's gone.
That's right.
But the truth is, Meta's defense is not good enough at this point to make a real difference for the Lakers, and they're not going to win a title with or without Meta. So as much as the Lakers are a team that we're used to seeing spend, and they've got their TV money. They're not obligated to throw good money after bad.
Yeah,
I would have been way more shocked if they'd kept him.
Yeah, we're going to talk about talk about the free agents, and we'll talk about some of the other things that are going on in just a few minutes. But this, to me, feels like the concession that the Lakers made in sort of, like you say, everybody knows it's a transition. Everyone knows it's a transitional season, and that a title, while they'll all talk about it, while they'll say we think we can make some noise, we'll take Kobe, he'll say I'll take my chances with my crew and all that kind of stuff, with the gang we got and all that kind of stuff that he likes to, the language kind of language he likes to throw out over Twitter.
Gang keeps shrinking. It's somewhere now between like a clique,
right?
Just a couple dudes who like to hang out.
This is what they did, because they're not throwing the season away. They're going to try to be competitive, I think, and they're going to do the best they can within the parameters that they've set, which is we're not touching next year's cap space, and nor should they. And so this is what you do. And like you say, if we're going to keep trying to sign guys, we're way into the tax, we led the league, you go ahead and you amnesty Meta. But you mentioned, Andy, the impact that it's going to have on the team. And as much as we like to tease about Meta's offensive peculiarities and how much we're going to miss those sort of semi-layup things that, like,
just Google Ron Artest yakety sax, which is one of the greatest. It was from the finals in 2010. One of the greatest sequences. This is how bad you know the sequence went. Kobe, on a second chance opportunity, just put up a three with like 22 seconds left. He actually made it. But by comparison, it was way more responsible than what Meta did leading up to it.
Right. And so, you know, we've all seen all these things. But defensively, the one place, and people will talk about how he's slowed down. He can't lock down the Durants of the world anymore. And he can't guard five positions and all these other things. All true. But there's no question that the defense was substantially better when he was there. If you look it up, they were 5 points better with Howard on the floor per 100 possessions. They were 4 points better with Meta World Peace on the floor per 100 possessions. So now you've traded or lost, you know, they haven't really traded anybody, you've lost easily your two best defenders on the floor. Kobe, by comparison, the Lakers defensively were four and a half points worse with Kobe on the floor. And, you know, Nash,
they were... in Kobe's defense, it's largely because he wasn't trying.
Right. Again, what was the first 45 games? He didn't even put in the effort. Blake, you know, Gasol, they're a little bit better. Blake, they're a little bit better. But they are setting themselves up with the free agents that they signed and all these things to be one of the worst defensive teams ever assembled.
This team could be worse than the Kwame Smush years defensively.
Something to look forward to. Let's talk about some of these free agents. Anyway, we both wish Meta well, as all Laker fans do.
Really going to miss the guy. Yeah, really grew to enjoy being around
for
him
all
a lot.
Of the, you know, Meta craziness. He's this, he's that, whatever. He's actually
a terrific teammate.
He's a great teammate. I'm not going to say that his time in L.A. was incident-free, because that's not true. There were moments where Meta screwed up royally and cost the team in terms of suspensions, the elbow to Harden, and the, you know, and a lot of different things, you know, the stuff against Dallas. I mean, none of this was
perfect.
Yeah. But
they would have never won the 2010 title without Meta.
Overall,
and the work
very
that he did
positive.
The work that he did off the court too, raising awareness for mental health issues, was phenomenal.
Right. So for all, I mean, there was a lot of concern when he got here, and I think overall Meta World Peace's tenure on a contract that a lot of people were worried about the length was absolutely a net positive for the Lakers.
No question.
All right, so let's move on to the free agents, because we talked about Chris Kaman last week, Andy. That's where they threw all their big money. Anybody who's willing to take a one-year, $3.1 million deal. Overall, you know, it's, we talked about it. It's, you know, it's not a terrible idea, and Kaman is still a pretty good player when he's healthy and all that. This week, Andy, the Lakers have not technically signed him but are working on a deal for Jordan Farmar. They have to figure out this buyout with his Turkish club. Wes Johnson, that came down on
today.
Well, officially today, but I think the right. word leaked on Saturday, I believe it was. And then Nick Young on, well, that was on
last
Friday,
week.
I believe. Yeah. So three free agents that the Lakers have signed.
All young, all 28 or younger.
Which, for the Lakers, is a major change
of pace. That's like an NCAA team for them.
Let's start with Nick Young, who I think is the highest profile of those guys. The guy that I think most people were surprised, like, wow. They got Nick Young on a minimum. He scores.
Yes, he does. He is a guy, if you think Kobe has no conscience, Kobe will occasionally look at Nick Young and go, damn. Wow, I would never in a million years have taken that shot. Nick Young loves to score. That is also all that Nick Young does. Fair statement?
Yes. Well, he dresses really cool.
He is an awesome dresser. He's a lot of fun. He's a funny dude. I mean, it's amazing, too, that he's managed to maintain a very sunny, quirky personality when you take into account he had a lot of bad shit happen to him when he was younger, you know, lost his brother in a murder. I mean, he's had a lot of bad stuff happen, and he seems like a really perennially sunny guy.
Well, you'd be sunny, too, if all you did was shoot and score.
I one time I remember you and I were talking about Nick Young, Brian, and I think I summarized this well. He is paid to be irresponsible on the court.
Well, you saw, I mean, you asked, what was that stat that popped up about Nick Young?
One of the greatest stats I've ever seen. It was in 2012, but I doubt much has changed since. As of 2012, Nick Young was the only player in NBA history with 3,500 points or more and less than 350 assists. He is also the only player in NBA history at the time with more threes than assists. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that one hasn't changed. That's mind-boggling when you think about it.
Fans are going to get frustrated with the defense. I mean, he basically, this is a great quote that he gave to the LA Times, where basically he said, you know, I promise I'm going to try. He promised the Lakers he was going to try to play defense. But we all know that why I was brought here. I was brought here to do the things I do, not the things I don't do. Basically, I don't do that.
He offered
I'll
a disclaimer,
try.
Essentially.
Right. And so, but, you know, he's going to be somebody that will come in handy. He's athletic. He can play out on the wing. That solves some of their small forward issue. Plus, he loves playing. Now, typically comes to L.A. and lights it up.
Yeah.
He lit up the Lakers for the 30 points last year, lit up the Clippers last year when he was here.
His highest career scoring average is against the Lakers.
Right.
Typically torched the Lakers on a regular basis.
And so overall, this is one that's very difficult to complain about, I think, for a Lakers fan. I mean, and so you're not going to do much better than Nick Young.
No, absolutely not. I thought about it, though. In a lot of ways, though, he is the ultimate D'Antoni guy. And the anti-D'Antoni.
Well, because he doesn't pass.
Right.
He'll take that part where you say...
The ball never sticks with Nick Young. I mean, he's not one of those guys that scores by taking 10 dribbles and like four head fakes and all that. You give him the ball, he puts it up quickly. However, the minute you give him the ball, it is going nowhere else but up.
Meta used to love talking about how D'Antoni says, you know, he gets mad. If you have a shot and you don't take it, D'Antoni gets mad. And Nick Young you don't have to worry about that.
Right.
But that whole, you know, energy, the ball finds energy.
The ball finds Nick Young when he's on the court. That is what's going to happen.
At some point, what's your over-under at what point Kobe and Nick Young literally have a wrestling match somewhere in the half court for the ball? Like, they both catch it at the same time, like simultaneous possession, like at the end of the Packers-Seahawks game last year, and they just start wrestling. I say... February, because I don't know when Kobe's going to be back.
Oh, Swaggy.
It's about the eighth game when Kobe comes back.
Swaggy P.
So that's it's a fun signing for us. Jordan Farmer, and I'm just reading a tweet from Mark Medina of the Daily News. I'm told the Lakers and Jordan Farmer are still working out a buyout. Sources say it's, quote, close to being done. Let's just assume that it does. Again, for the minimum, as your fourth guard in a year where you don't know where Kobe's going to play or when,
fourth or fifth, depending on where Kobe plays.
Better than anybody else you're going to find for $1.5 million. And he's still relatively young.
Yeah, and he's also, I think he's going to be a much better and I think much happier fit with Mike D'Antoni than he was with Phil. He did not like playing in the triangle.
Gives you a guard that is most comfortable pushing the ball up the floor when you need a change of pace. Something that Nash does, but you don't want that group running up and down the floor necessarily as much.
It would not shock me if Farmar actually played more at the two than at the point, just because I think whether he'll admit it or not, I think he's more of a natural scorer than a natural distributor. So and D'Antoni really likes the way Steve Blake runs the offense. I mean, obviously, a training camp can change all that, but it wouldn't surprise me if Jordan played a lot off ball.
Anyway, but it's a good signing, and
it's also an underrated athlete.
Yeah, it's a good use of $1.5 million, and I like I said, I think he'll be a different guy than he was here in terms of his attitude. The last one I think is the one that has fans kind of on both sides of the fence here a little bit, and I think I will stipulate at the beginning, philosophically, the Lakers are doing what both of us wanted them to do, which is go sign some young guys and see what happens and whatever. They picked up Wes Johnson, who has the fourth pick of the draft in 2010, not that long ago. He's only 23, I think, 24. 26.
He's 26.
He should be 23.
Well, he transferred a year in college.
That's the one of my big issues here, and I totally bricked that little seg into Wes. I am not optimistic about this one because, Andy, Wes Johnson has been, for the most part, not just bad in his NBA career, but awful. But like flat out awful. And we've gotten a lot of, look at guys like Jordan Hill, or look at Trevor Reason when they picked him up, or look at Shannon Brown, or whatever. Earl Clark. And the biggest difference between Wes Johnson and those guys. Is that those guys, generally speaking, had trouble playing. They had trouble getting on the floor and playing consistent minutes. even before you talk about how productive they were. Like Shannon Brown had trouble getting on the floor.
Sure. Shannon and Earl, right, especially.
Right. Those guys had trouble getting on the floor. Ariza actually was very, you know, showed signs of productivity, and so did Hill before they got here. Wes Johnson hasn't, playing time has not been his issue. He's played 4,500 minutes in the NBA. So it's harder to say he's a guy who hasn't had a chance to get going, and has been just off. He's, you know, a shooter who can't shoot and all these other things. I am skeptical. I don't mind that they took a flyer on him. I am skeptical that it will work.
Well, I will agree with you that he has had more of an opportunity, I think, in particular than, say, Shannon or Earl, when you make those type of comparisons, because they were guys that came to mind for me as well. You know, when they came, both of those guys, when they came over in that trade, nothing was expected from you and I thought, or Clark might get,
absolutely. They were both the throw in.
Yeah, well, we thought Clark might get waived before the beginning of this season. Where I will give Wes Johnson a bit of a benefit of the doubt, or at least optimism, if not pure benefit of the doubt, is his first year in Minnesota was chaotic. I mean, that was the year, Rambis's last year, when he was, for reasons nobody could understand, very hesitant to play Kevin Love a lot of minutes, ended up getting fired. His one and only season most recently in Phoenix, also chaotic. They fired Alvin Gentry, then brought in Lindsey Hunter. And his last couple months in Phoenix, where things were, I think, more stable, he played better. He played better. He didn't play through the roof, but he played better. So in theory, maybe playing in a situation that's a little more stable, and God knows the Lakers can only be more stable this coming season than they were last year. It would be almost impossible not to be. Maybe that helps Johnson.
The key, I think, for everybody with Johnson is you can't look at him as a guy, and even he said this, you know, being the fourth pick, he referred to it in an interview that I was reading as a, I'm quoting him, a stigma that sticks to you. You cannot think of him that way. It's like maybe he'll fulfill the promise of the fourth pick in the draft. Finally, throw that out the window. If Johnson can be a productive member of a rotation in the NBA, like a good just guy you can put on the court who can dependably be your seventh or eighth man, that's a win for the Lakers in this regard, because they're only paying million and change for him. And maybe at that point he becomes somebody that they can carry forward, because he still won't cost that much. You saw some stuff from Dwight Howard this weekend that you found interesting.
Yeah, he had his press conference with the Rockets officially introduced. And seeing Howard at the presser and seeing him talk about it, it struck me how much more at peace and comfortable he seemed in that situation. And talking in a way where you could tell he was taking ownership of his new surroundings and it feeling like his team. And in particular, what stood out to me too was, you know, there's a lot of talk, and I really acknowledge that Ashiq was not happy about this trade, doesn't want to play behind Howard, doesn't want to play alongside Howard, which really makes sense because he's not a four, and that he would like to be traded.
Doesn't even want to play in front of him.
He doesn't even want Howard and backing him up.
It doesn't matter where you put them together. He just doesn't want to do it.
Right. And
he would not like it in a house. He would not like it with a mouse.
You know, Kevin McHale and Daryl Morey have said that Ashiq is going nowhere, that Howard and Harden, you know, the two biggest guys they have, want him there. And Howard talked, too, about how he understands where Ashiq is coming from. And right now, maybe at his age, he can't see the bigger picture, and that it's his job to make Ashiq better, make him feel more comfortable. And again, that ownership of the team, that's not something that Howard would have done last year with the Lakers. And I don't know if he would have felt comfortable in that way with the Lakers next season, or maybe even the season after. And you could see how Howard felt really wanted there. And whether you think that that's indicative of Howard being coddled or oversensitive or just needy, or the Lakers bricking it in terms of their own inclusiveness towards him, or their pitch, or somewhere in between, it really struck me how much more at home and at peace he seems to be with the Rockets. So it'll be interesting to see how he plays next season.
Well, somebody asked on Twitter whether or not where we thought, or I thought, whoever answered first, would Howard would end up. I mean, do you think he'll end up next year as the best center in the NBA? And I don't think there's any question. I mean, granted, you can argue how many good centers there really are when it's all said and done, but I think a healthy Dwight Howard, and this is something we talked about before, a healthy Dwight Howard is a top five player in the NBA. That doesn't necessarily make him a superstar, like you say, that you can build your team around and can lead you to the promised land, that he's got the stuff, so to speak, or whatever, but he's a top five player. So, I mean, those guys are very difficult to replace. Speaking of relocated centers, Andy, Andrew Bynum, I don't think it's actually been officially announced yet. I think they're still hammering out the details, and this sort of thing can take a while with David Lee as your agent.
Or Andrew Bynum as your client.
Going back to the Cavs and back to Mike Brown.
The same Mike Brown, you may recall, that had a lot of issues coaching Andrew Bynum their one season with
mostly
the Lakers.
Mostly because Bynum treated him with open contempt basically all year.
You and I, Brian,
he didn't even try to hide.
No, he did not. He actually went out of his way to make these feelings of disrespect and contempt, as you said, as crystal clear as possible. The minute Derek Fisher got traded, Drew just started acting out. I mean, it was like watching a kid go through a divorce.
Right.
And like, you know, the parent he was closest to got moved, and, you know, Bynum used to call Fish the Prez, and that, and he definitely looked up to Fish. He was straight up acting out.
And I'm sure that's what happened when Mike Brown and Mitch sat down to talk about it, as they went through that. You know, and you know, during Drew's parent-teacher conference evaluations and stuff.
His exit interview. Look, your GM is still your GM. Right. Your coach is still your coach.
It doesn't mean we'd love you any less. It just means that we needed
Although
to get
Derek.
Although
we do like you a whole lot less.
We needed to get Derek off our cap.
Yeah.
Everybody still loves you. But it just goes to show that Mike Brown is, in fact, the nicest human being ever. And he's always said, you just give me whatever players you want to give me, and I'll coach. My job is to coach them.
Yeah.
My job is to coach.
Or it does make you think that Bynum is so damn flighty, because he really does exist on his own planet, that he may not have even put two and two together and realized that Mike Brown was his coach that year. I wonder if he just thought, like, they hired B. Shaw, who put on a boatload of weight and started wearing glasses.
I mean, he's like, I knew it was a black guy. Well, but I don't like to get bogged down in specifics.
According to David Lee, Mike Brown's pitch to Drew is what put it over the top.
And let bygones be bygones.
I'm just wondering if he's like, Mike Brown, how do I know that name?
It's such a common name. I mean, there's so many guys. I mean, this guy wears glasses. There's another guy I met one time who wears glasses. You know, I mean, who's to say? I mean, quite frankly, Andy, Andrew Bynum, he's like, I work in basketball. There are a lot of black guys around here. Supposed to remember all of them by name,
and I don't really listen to what any of them tell me.
Right.
So it's very easy to mix them up.
I remember the guy who used to give me books. He's gone.
He was white.
Right.
That's why I remember him.
White coach who gave me books.
Black guy on the court in the 24 jersey used to boss me around a lot.
Right. I mean, you know, and I remember the video games at the ESPN zone. So I mean, there's who's to say? But it'll be interesting to see how that works out, because if Bynum can play, the Cavs are definitely a playoff team in the East, and will, you know, for six. I think it's $6 million is the only guaranteed money they're putting in it. If they get mileage out of them, it becomes a great signing for Cleveland. It's time now, Andy. People ask us a lot of questions, and at this time of year, they tend to all be the same version of, "Hey, who can the Lakers go sign?
What's the deal with Lamar Odom?"
Right, stuff like that. So we're widening the mailbag a little bit, and we offer people the opportunity to ask us questions about anything. So without further ado, let's get going with our five questions from Twitter that are not about basketball. Andy,
The first comes from @fdonk. Who curses most on the podcast, AK or BK?
Shit, that is a great question. I would say you. I think I am more careful about gratuitous cursing than you are. I think you curse more than I do on the podcast. We never counted, but I think you do.
You know,
in civilian life, I think it's probably a tie. Both of us curse a lot. But in this,
I think you're right to a point, Brian.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I'm more likely to drop a shit in there, you know, or a drop a bunch of shits in there. Just shit is more likely to come out of my mouth on several levels. However, I think you are more likely to drop an F-bomb in there. You are much more likely to touch the electric rail of cursing than I am. I think you actually drop more F-bombs, however more selective, than I do.
What we need now is somebody to keep score going forward. Next question.
From @Albert_Loon. What feels better, real or fake booty, Brian?
Well, it's been a long time since I felt any booty other than, I guess, my own or my wife's.
Both of which are real.
Both of which are absolutely real. And to be perfectly honest, maybe I didn't get out there enough in my single days. I don't know what a fake booty feels like. Like maybe, or maybe it's like a good hair job. Like, you know, with your, like people say you only notice the bad weaves. Maybe I felt a fake booty and didn't realize it. I will say, with fake boobs, never been a fan.
Yeah, me neither. I've never actually also, I guess, had the pleasure of a fake booty, to the best of my knowledge, particularly if my wife is listening.
I've touched a mannequin's butt, but I don't think that's what Albert Loon is talking about here. No. I think he means back in our swinging single days, Andy, when you and I used to go out and score chicks.
I don't know, but what I was trying to figure out is, was Loon referring to, like, implants? Or you know how you can actually get those fake asses that you can wear under the pants? You know, like sort of the ass...
I think it was sort
ass
of...
Ass supplements,
go,
if you will.
Go with it where you will.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of fake whatever. I actually saw The Heat last weekend. My wife wanted to see it. And Sandra Bullock, who I think is attractive, she's not necessarily my type, but she's certainly pretty. She looks like she's had some work done, and she looked worse. She looked like she's had a bit of a facelift. This is no sources or anything like that.
Nor is that her booty.
And you know what,
though? Have you ever felt Sandra Bullock's face, I guess, is the next question.
But generally speaking, like you, I think work usually makes the woman look worse.
I agree. Especially when you know it's been done. Next question from at Keith Kessler. Andy, this is something that you've recently started to really experience. I have more experience with it than you do. I'm curious as to your answer. At Keith Kessler asks, when is it time to shave your head?
When you're debating it. That's the point. When you have to start asking the question of whether or not it's a good idea. It's very similar to when franchises start asking internally, or the word gets out, should we fire this coach? This coach is on the hot seat. Once you're asking it, you know the answer. If you are in any way thinking about whether or not this is a good idea, that's the point when you should shave your head.
Right, and I will say...
Or buzz it, whatever. Right,
from experience, and I will tell you, and I know the same was true of me, and it was certainly true of you, we all look back on it, and we realize, man, I probably should have done this about 2 years ago. So that is the correct answer to the question, and I'm very pleased that you recognize it. Now that you're sort of one of us.
Although, we should point this out.
I bick. Andy
buzzes. I use a clip. We should point this out because our friend John Ireland spreads misinformation on ESPN LA 710 all the time, saying that I have started shaving my head. That's not true.
No, you buzz. I bick.
I buzz. Exactly.
With a shick, but it's sort of like Xerox machine.
Actually,
it's the same.
With a shick set.
Yeah.
Your wife.
Well, she's not usually there when I do it. But anyway, moving on. I've said too much already. All right, go ahead. Last question.
Oh, sorry. Last question from at Lake Show Fanatic. The movie you're most embarrassed about loving.
Now, when people ask questions about this, Andy, what they're really referring to is, what is the sissy movie that you like the most? Like, what's the movie that, you know... Do you watch Stealing Home while nobody's watching? Do you like Mystic Pizza?
Right.
Have you seen My Best Friend's Wedding like five or six
times?
It's
never for guys. Like, you should be embarrassed that you love Con Air, right. For example. No. It's a piece of crap, but
right.
It's okay.
And it's a girly movie. Right. That's really what people are getting
for the most
at.
Part.
And I will tell you, I really don't have a lot of those. Like, I thought about it, and I don't. I know it's not, you know, really bad rom-coms that guys aren't supposed to like. You know, guys with tool belts and things like that are not supposed to like.
First of all, you don't even own a tool belt.
And that's what I'm getting at. Where I think fall into what I'm assuming Lake Show Fanatic is getting into is with television and music. Television, watch a ton of HGTV. Love watching people decorate their houses. I find it aspirational. I wish I had the money to do it myself. I cry at everything. And musically, while I think I have excellent taste in music, while maybe not as current as some other people, but, you know...
Maybe not as
current living people. People who are alive.
As current as people born in...
I, the other day, was driving along Laurel Canyon Boulevard, and Rio, the Duran Duran hit, came on. And I was singing up a storm in the car. I make no bones about the fact that I still consider Belinda Carlisle my first crush. And if you want to get more current, I find like bubblegum poppy stuff like Katy Perry and things like that hooky, and I will bounce my head when I listen to it.
It helps that she's hot, though.
It does.
As was Belinda Carlisle.
Oh, gosh, I love Belinda Carlisle. So, I mean, I definitely fall into...
She parted.
Less... Yeah, she did.
She probably, at the risk of being irresponsible saying this, she may have had an experience with a fake booty at some point. Because during the
she
day,
lived.
People, I don't think people realized how wild the Go-Go's were. They were, they put a lot of male bands to shame.
Right, just because they sang We Got the Beat and Vacation and happy little
they
songs like that,
they
partied their asses off. Real or fake. So that's me. My weaknesses, so to speak, do not come in film. They come in music and in television.
My number one, the movie that I am really embarrassed to admit I flat out love, 1985's St. Elmo's Fire.
Wow.
I love it.
That's a terrible movie.
Yes,
it's
it is.
It's a terrible movie.
Yes, it
it's
is.
It's a terrible, terrible movie.
Yes, it is.
What's and St. Elmo's Fire is the one that I, for years, transposed elements of the plot from St. Elmo's Fire and what's the other one? The other movie. It's all the same people.
Breakfast Club?
No.
Pretty in Pink?
No.
St.
Elmo's Fire had...
St. Elmo's Fire, Demi Moore, Judd Nelson.
Right, no, right. But what's
Lesson
the,
Zero?
No. What's the other movie that all those people were in where, like, Demi Moore is, like, rocking in the... She's like...
St. Elmo's Fire.
Oh. That's that one?
Yes. The one where she's rocking in her apartment.
Right.
And trying to freeze herself
Rob
to death.
Lowe has to come get her.
That's St. Elmo's Fire.
Now, what was the one that was kind of like that?
St. Elmo's Fire.
Huh. I'll have to look that up.
It's St. Elmo's Fire.
Clearly, I'm still a little confused.
But the thing is, and it is a bad movie. There's so much faux angst going on, so much absurdity in the plot lines going on. You're supposed to feel bad that Emilio Estevez can't get Andy McCarthy, who very rightfully is put off by the fact that he is flat out stalking her. The relationship between Judd Nelson and Ally Sheedy is absurd. But... the time when it came out, I was like 13, I believe. It's when you're very cognizant of becoming an adult. I had been bar mitzvahed at that point. So by,
by Jewish law. You had taken care of that.
And
I don't know what the problem is.
I remember seeing the movie with a bunch of friends, like mixed guys and girls, which, you know, at that time is a big deal. Having this deep discussion at Westport Plaza afterwards about which of us was most like which character. But it just, it was a like a seminal moment of that generation. And the Brat Pack was huge. And I've watched that movie so many times, especially too because the improv group that I used to be in where we'd parody movies, we did St. Elmo's, and I had
about
to watch
last
it.
Night.
Okay, I had to watch it over and
that's
over.
That's the one that I transpose plot points with.
Right. Oh, because it does have Rob Lowe and Demi Moore.
Right, the same kind of people. So
right.
that's the answer to that question.
But honestly, I love it. It's a piece of shit, and I love it.
You know what? Who's to say? I don't think... Lake fan, Lake Show fanatic would begrudge you for that. So,
he might.
That's a little peek into our pop culture history. Finally, Andy, before we go, misadventures in press releases. Our friend Dave McMenamin tweeted this out earlier
at
Monday
McTen.
Afternoon at McTen. A must follow for all Laker fans. I assume most of you do anyway. Can't make this up. In a press release about athletes expected to show at a Playboy Mansion event, James Harden is spelled James Harden with an O or James Hardon. Just like to remind you, it's a Playboy party. It happens.
Does happen. You would think spell check might have
caught
that.
I don't know if spell check knows. Just a little proofreading required.
You would think that after the KTVU mishap with the Asiana flight and the fake names given. Double check
and
your
I did
press
check,
release.
And I checked to see if there was an adult film star named James Hardon to see if he might have been coming to the party. No, they meant the basketball player.
Somebody needs to do that and grow a beard.
Right. Oh, there's not yet, but there will be. So, by the way, if you're looking for a niche, there you go. You're welcome. So, you know, next time you write a press release,
double check.
Just double check it.
Sure, you have a 1 in 5 chance of getting the vowel right at all times, but double check just
sometimes,
the same.
And sometimes Y. All right, Andy.
H-A-R-D-Y-N.
Hardin. Hardin. Would have been better. Would have been better. All right, well, but we'll be back. Maybe we'll be back at some point. Maybe later this week, maybe next. Andy, anything else?
Nope.
All right, we'll see everybody next time.
See you.